Hey everyone, you might remember me from Teen Mom 2, but my 15 minutes is almost up. So I'm back with another podcast. I'm your barely famous host, Kale Lowry, and I'm catching up with people from my past, putting my exes on the hot seat, and chatting with TikTokers, influencers, and other reality stars. Get weird with me every Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast One, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. Today we are just taking your calls. Every once in a while we like to just hear from you guys and answer questions. Old school, so we'll be doing that. I thought before we got to the phone zone, I would talk a little bit about my buddy Bob Saget and what happened to him. We now know that there was an intracranial bleed. I have lots of thoughts about this. One is it was a little odd to me that they didn't report that sooner, because you see intracranial bleeds right away at the time of the so-called gross dissection of the autopsy, and he had an autopsy very quickly. So I don't know why they did not report that right away. The other thing is, for a middle-aged man to hit his head hard enough to die subsequently of an intracranial bleed – and again, they didn't really specify whether it was a subdural or a parenchymal bleed or an epidural bleed. These are different kinds of bleeds and are associated with different intensities of head injury. But let's assume it was a epidural bleed. Well, let's not even make assumptions. Let's just say it was a bad enough head injury to cause a bleed of sufficient quantity to essentially squash his brain. That's how bleeds do that. They just kind of squash the brain, especially in the back of the head. They can hit to get to the brain stem. They can cause what's called a herniation. In your brain, you have a very thick shelf that separates the top part of the brain from the lower part, which is the brain stem and the cerebellum. And if the pressure gets high on top, the brain literally pushes through that falx. It's called F-A-L-X. And that squashes – that's it. You're done right then. That's it. So I don't know if he herniated or not. That also wasn't in the report. So there's a lot of stuff missing. But the thing that is most troubling to me is not that this happened, which is the sad part, because like if you look at – go watch Heather McDonald's video. She collapses on stage. She is unconscious before she hits the ground. She has a clear, sudden drop in her blood pressure, massive hypotension. A middle-aged woman and a middle-aged man like Saget, and apparently Chelsea Handler has had something like this too, though again, no details have been released on that. They don't – that does not happen to them. That does not happen, okay? They don't suddenly lose their blood pressure. I mean, if they were hiking in the desert for 2 days and had underlying cardiac pathology and jumped up suddenly from a lying position, maybe. But even those people, even that circumstance, people will typically kind of know they're falling and put their hands out to protect their head, or they do not go backwards like that. That kind of backwards is because the legs completely collapse because she, and in Bob's case, I'm sure, probably already unconscious. Well, Heather definitely unconscious. You can see it. So the question is, why is everyone dropping out all of a sudden? Now, something's going on, right? I'm gonna sort of fill in the story on Bob. What I suspect happened was he was probably brushing his teeth or something at the bathroom, and woke up on the floor. He didn't have any warning that he was going down. He lost consciousness. God knows how long he was down on the floor. And one of the things about head injury is it's disorienting, and you're fatigued. I mean, you're exhausted. You've been hit over the head and rendered unconscious. Your next move is not to walk out to the lobby and go, I need an ambulance. You might go to your phone, but it's not uncommon for people to go, I don't know just what happened. Let me lay down for a second. And unfortunately, that's enough to have trouble. You know how people always say if you've had a concussion, they wake you up all the time to make sure you're okay? This is that circumstance. So there was nobody there to wake him up or to see if he woke up and all of the above. As you see with Heather McDonald, she ended up in the hospital in the ICU because they had to monitor her carefully for further accumulation. She also had bleeding. She had a skull fracture and a bleed, much like Bob. And they had to monitor her to make sure that blood doesn't accumulate, because if it does, they have to go in and surgically remove it with what's called a burr hole. So there's a lot going on here. And let me preface my next statement by saying any speculation about the relationship with vaccine therapy and boosters in particular should not discourage you from getting boosters and vaccines. You should follow the data we know to be clear that if you're vaccinated, you're like 70 times less likely to be hospitalized. I can assure you from my personal experience, I've seen some nasty vaccine reactions, lots of them, still worth it. COVID, unprotected, is really nasty. And even Omicron, really nasty. I had somebody almost die of that. And if you're vaccinated twice, it's a modest illness at best, you know, at worst, rather. If you've had boostering and you really don't want to deal with serious, you know, significant viral illness, it's rendered to a mild illness. So I'm seeing clinically massive difference, and of course this is borne out in the data, between vaccinated people, double vaccinated, boosted. Now, the data on boostering, if you're below a certain year age, I would agree with you. It's not really there. Now, if you want to get it, you should. It does help, but we don't yet have the randomized controls data to say you should do this. My patients over 65, over 70, not only did I got them boosted before they actually rendered the recommendation, because I knew the recommendation was coming. I knew it was going to be good for that population. And I've already begun discussing with my patients who are over 75 a fourth vaccine for them. So that's my context of vaccine therapy. That doesn't mean we shouldn't look at the reactions to the vaccine and understand them thoroughly. There is one thing about, I believe, what happened to Chelsea, though I don't have a lot of details. What I know happened to Heather and what it seems happened to Bob, they all three had the booster exactly 3 weeks before these falls. So my sort of thought to everybody getting boosted is, hey, man, pay attention to if you feel lightheaded, keep well hydrated. If you start to get dizzy, immediately sit down. Maybe you shouldn't go on any long car rides. Definitely don't do any heavy exertions, particularly where you're changing positions, for about a month after your vaccine. That's my recommendation. Based on nothing, because we don't know whether this is real or not. But that's kind of how medicine works, is doctors step in and use our judgment and go, huh, something might be going on here. I see the benefits. I want people to get this thing. Definitely, if they're motivated, they should get it. But here's my recommendation to you. Pay attention. Pay attention, you guys, that if you're getting boosted, something might be going on in middle-aged folks, male and female. It does not appear to be myocarditis, by the way. That appears to be something limited to – I was worried it was going to be myocarditis, which is a much more serious thing, which is something limited to younger males. And then boosting in younger males, again, this is a controversial topic in the science. Follow Dr. Vinay Prasad on Twitter at vprasadmdmph. PRASAD, Dr. Prasad, follow him carefully, because he is posting the science on boosting in certain age groups and masking in certain age groups, and he's posting the actual science. Now, in those earlier male adolescent age groups, we are seeing myocarditis. And here's the thing I want you to know about that. The term myocarditis is being just sort of tossed around like, well, it's myocarditis, no big deal. It's you know, it gets better, whatever. Prior to the present moment, myocarditis was a medical emergency. You went to the hospital by ambulance, because when the heart is inflamed with a virus or any other inflammatory reaction, there's a possibility of a major rhythm disturbance and sudden death in any age group. And so what we do, we take myocarditis, put them in the hospital, put them on a monitor immediately and watch them. So if they developed any rhythm disturbances, you intervened and get through this. It does appear to be mild. There doesn't appear to be much of that. That's the fact. But still, I want you to understand that myocarditis was a serious condition prior to when now we're like, oh, it's no big deal. It's just self-limited. It doesn't seem like a big deal. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. Now, thankfully, it doesn't appear to be associated with the usual complications. It does appear to be mild. And one of the things about myocarditis that scared me personally, again, before the present moment, I'm talking about when my kids were young and viruses often infect the heart, was that it can be associated with cardiomyopathy later, meaning the heart fails and you need a heart transplant. That now we're not seeing any of that, not seeing any of that, but people are watching carefully to make sure we're not. So I just want to we've just gotten, let's put it this way. The fact that medical professionals aren't driving the conversation on this is wrong with a capital W. It's no way you can possibly understand the context or the meaning of these words you're just hearing for the first time that we in medicine work with on a daily basis, and I have for 40 years, 35 years. Well, to be fair, back when my clinical training started, so 83. So yeah, 40 years. So 40 years of dealing with these things, you get a pretty clear set of instincts and judgments around these conditions. And this is a new context, and it's probably a new syndrome of – syndrome meaning not a diagnosis but a constellation of features around a diagnosis oftentimes. No way you could understand that. You just learned how to say the word ivermectin. You just learned how to say the word hydroxychloroquine. You just heard about this thing called myocarditis. You shouldn't know everything there is to know about that. I've been seeing myocarditis my entire career. I've been using those other two medications, which I can't repeat because I'll get canceled, for 40 years, particularly my lupus patients. And by the way, in immigrants, we are required to give ivermectin to immigrants from certain countries. As soon as they hit our soil, they get a course of ivermectin because of the high incidence of what I call platy helminths, of ascaris infections, that sort of thing. So there you go. Matt, that's my rant for the day. Did that all cover the territory? Did that make sense? Did I say anything that felt like it needed further clarification?
I think you did good. If you want to sing the Full House theme song, I think fans might appreciate that.
No.
A thrilling tribute.
And Bob and I shared – people don't know this fact. We shared a very intimate phenomenon in which we both played the Olsen twins' father. I played it in their movie. He played it in the Full House television program. You didn't know that, Gary?
I knew it, but the fact that you just drew that correlation is fantastic.
He and I would talk about it. It's funny. It was like, you know, we both had affection for MK, Mary-Kate, and Ashley. I was appreciative to have the opportunity. Funny footage from that film came up recently. I was looking at it. It wasn't bad. I mean, at least what I had with the girls. I don't say the movie wasn't bad. I'm saying my moments weren't bad with them.
No, you were good. I do really sincerely hope that is a Jeopardy question 5 years from now. what two luminaries?
Oh my God, that's so crazy. So all right. So Gary, did that all? Could you follow me? Was I too long-winded and verbose? I really wanted to make sure I covered it. Because people take stuff out of context. Poor, you know, I see what's happened to Joe Rogan. It's what's happened to me in the past. And you really have to come back and explain everything. And of course, people seem to have no patience for it. So I don't want to miss my opportunity. Did that make sense? Or do you have any follow-up questions?
I did not find that too verbose. You're clearly passionate about this and knowing, or rightfully so, knowing you very well, you know, you care deeply for people and you want to get this information out correctly. When it changes, you like to admit that as well.
Oh, yeah.
And update people.
Yeah.
I guess from a personal standpoint, I have questions about, you know, the young male myocarditis thing. I mean, at what point do you advertise, you know, do you advise young children, you know, to get vaccinated, to get boosted? I saw that Moderna or maybe Pfizer was asking for an exemption on 6 months to 5 years recently. Yeah.
So, you know, here's my recommendation. Talk to your pediatrician. Clearly vaccines have benefit. Whether there should be boostering, that is an open question. You should talk with their pediatrician. But I want to review some data for you. I'm going to bring this data to Corolla. This is data that Peter Attia put together from government sources. And I want people to understand the relative risk of COVID at a particular age relative. This has been my complaint from the beginning. The risk-reward analysis has been shit. They've been doing things by fiat without looking at the risk-benefit analysis. So let me just tell you how this goes. So I'm going to look at overdose, motor vehicle accidents, suicide, and homicide. And we're going to use, this is Peter Attia. Watch, listen to his podcast, The Drive. It's the, he has a great podcast with Z-Dog and Monica Gandhi, where they just review all this stuff. But I wrote down some of his data, which I thought was so very compelling. He looked at COVID as unity, as one, and then assessed the risk of other causes of death relative to COVID. So what do you imagine under five, risk of motor vehicle accident is under age five relative to COVID? How many more times is COVID worse or better than a motor vehicle accident? See what I'm asking?
Yes, I do. And I understand how you're setting it up. But based on knowing you guys, I would say motor vehicles 10, 20 times more.
11 times. How about homicide of a five-year-old? How many more times than COVID?
It's got to be at least three or four.
10 times. Accidental overdoses, meaning, you know, poisonings of children, twice COVID. All right. How about 5 to 14-year-olds? Overdose is the same as COVID in 5 to 14. How about suicide? How much worse is suicide than COVID in a 5 to 14-year-old?
Oh, lately, I got to imagine it's 15.
It's 6.5, but it's going up. You're right. It's 10 times in 15 to 25-year-olds. You're 10 times more likely in 5 to 14 to die in a motor vehicle accident, 5 times more likely in 5 to 14 to die of homicide. In 5 to 25-year-olds, so this late adolescent, early adulthood, overdose, suicide, motor vehicle accident, homicides, all 10 times more likely to die than COVID. And in 25 to 35-year-old, overdose close to 7 times, suicide 2 times, motor vehicle accident twice, homicide twice, COVID. You got to put this in context. People are exercised about COVID, and yet your 15-year-old is, and your 9-year-old and you is 10 times more likely to die in a motor vehicle accident. Your 20-year-old is 10 times more likely to die of homicide and 10 times more likely to die of an overdose. And I would argue the overdose category in particular is the most tragic because it can be dealt with. It can be changed. And yet nothing being done. It's disgusting. So come on now. What are we doing here, folks? What is it we're doing? And it's again in the same podcast that Tia talked about. He had – I have great respect for that guy. He talked about navigation. A family asked him to come in to convince their 35-year-old son to get vaccinated. He said, "No, I'm happy to do that." And the mother and father were, of course, full vaxxed, and they were freaking out about this son not being willing to get vaccinated at age 35. And finally, he asked a simple question of the father. He goes, "What do you imagine your son's risk is of hospitalization and death if he doesn't get vaccinated?" And the father said, "Oh, 50%. It's like 7 per 100,000. It's the fact that he thought it was 50%. That is an abject failure of public health. Their job should be education, and instead it has been terrorizing people. 50%. The dad thought his risk was. It made me remember what I was getting back when I got COVID, and people going, "Are you scared? Are you scared?" I thought, why would I be scared? I have a 1% fatality rate. Why would I even be thinking about fatality? If it were 20%, I might think of it, and I certainly would like to stay out of the hospital because then my fatality rate may go up to 5%. But what are we doing? What have we done to people? And so, in a weird way, I don't blame people for freaking out about masks and freaking out about vaccines. They have not been taught the reality of the data at given age groups, and it's back to the stuff that Carolla has been yelling about since the beginning. Which is, they should have been telling us the real risk categories, which is above 65, certainly above 75, where it's devastation, it's terrible. But under 35, under 40, it's negligible. Not that it doesn't kill people in that age group. Don't do that. It does. It's nasty. It's a nasty illness, and it's highly contagious. And we need to get it under control to protect a lot of people, not just that will die under their 40s, but of course the at-risk category. But we could have done that in a targeted way without using a sledgehammer and trusting the public to be adult and get properly educated, which gives me the brings me around to mask right now. Monica Gandhi is another great follow. Monica Gandhi, G-A-N-D-H-I-9, at Monica Gandhi 9, has really been on top of the mask data, and she's a mask advocate, and she is saying very clearly that N95, all those you know, very fitted masks confer protection somewhat. But if you want protection, it's somewhat, particularly if you have prolonged exposure to somebody with the illness, protects you, doesn't protect you from anybody else. The data is clear on that. There were two randomized control studies. One was in Denmark and one was in Bangladesh. They actually opened the data on the Bangladesh data, and the Bangladesh study was 600,000 participants because everyone was so worked up that it was a negative study, essentially. It showed that masks on a mass scale, on a population basis, really don't do anything. They opened the data. They reanalyzed it. Multiple groups reanalyzed it. Actually, it was even less effective than the publication actually pointed out. So mass recommendation, clearly not effective. Individuals who are at risk and wanting to protect themselves should, N95 or above. So I suspect that's why we're seeing the mask mandates go away, because the data is now clear. The real interesting question is, so why the F did it take 2 years for them to come up with this data? And by the way, the Danish study was like a year ago, and same with Bangladesh, like at least 8 months ago. Why didn't they use it and educate? I am so disgusted by our public health system and the way they behave during this pandemic. I just takes my breath away. However, I'm still here to tell you that I'm seeing Fauci adjust course. I've told you from the beginning he will come out looking okay. Adam is right. He was adulterated for a while, but he has been a source of inspiration and great wisdom and knowledge for me through five pandemics. We have SARS-1, MERS, H1N1, HIV, and now this, SARS-2. And I just think he'll revert to the mean. I think he had a period where things were crazy, but I think his recommendation will revert to the mean. And I would advise people to look at his recommendations as sort of aggressive. His recommendations are aggressive. I think back now to the AIDS days when he was just hammering us about how it was going to be 2 million people dead, 2 million people dead. It doesn't just affect, you know, the homosexual population. And so we marched out as good soldiers and we scared the shit out of everybody who were heterosexual. And then congratulated ourselves afterwards for not allowing HIV to break out significantly amongst heterosexuals. And people have feelings about that now, and I don't blame them. But I would still – we pointed at Africa and said, look, it broke out there in heterosexual populations. It could have happened here. We made a big deal about it. But by the way, we did not shame anybody. We did not blame anybody. We used stories and telling stories about the people who were dying of this thing. And let's remind ourselves, you know, while this disease has a 0.0001 death rate in, say, a 25-year-old, HIV had a 100%. Orders and orders and orders of magnitude more lethal, 100% fatal. And I, as a third and fourth year medical student at the time, was telling people that they were going to die every day, that they had 6 months to live, and there was nothing we could do about it. It was a horrible, horrible, horrible time, and there are very few people left available now to tell the tale. But we learned how to change behavior, and again, it was with narratives, relatable sources, music, humor, stories, not shaming and proclaiming from on high. That never ever has worked, never will work. So the mallet that public health used, and the fact that they didn't educate properly, is an abject failure. And we will look back on this. It will take a long time for people to get honest about it because everyone's worked up about it. But it will look terrible in retrospect. So that is my sort of setting the record straight on a number of topics. Thank you all for listening. Let me go to some calls. Don't underestimate the growth in the job market this year. Instead, make this your best year ever by sourcing top-level candidates with Ladders. That's right. During COVID, lots of companies paused their search for hiring. That has changed. Now hiring managers and recruiters
are competing for candidates on the same job posting on websites. You posted your management position on the usual job posting websites. You detailed the job, experience, education, and you still got buried under resumes from entry-level applicants. Letters isn't for the masses. The Letters is where smart recruiters are hiring and hiring managers find superior, expertly screened candidates to fill $100,000 to $500,000 positions. On average, Letters job seekers have 15 years experience and most have a bachelor's or master's degree. Letters saves you time with the tap to call, one-click contact, unlimited resume downloads, and advanced features that separate active, ready-to-hire candidates from those just shopping. Save time and effort. Step up your search to the Letters and target professionals that meet your specs the first time. Visit theladders.com. Ladders like you climb a ladder, L-A-D-D-E-R-S. Visit theladders.com/podcast. Visit theladders.com/Drew. That is theladders.com/Drew. Bull and Branch, you know I sleep on these sheets every night. I love them. Gosh, how did we first get introduced to them? I don't even remember, but once we found them, we were in love. Bull and Branch makes not just the softest organic sheets on the market, they get better with every wash. And comfort isn't the only standard. They only use 100% sustainable raw material. And as the first fair trade certified manufacturer of linen, you can feel as good about your Bull and Branch sheets as they feel against your skin. Of course, they have buttery soft, lightweight, organic cotton, and classic satin weave for sheets. Not too hot, not too cool. Made to the highest standards. There's nothing worse than fitted sheets that don't fit. But with Bull and Branch, they offer 17-inch deep-fitted sheets and labeled sides to help you make your bed beautifully every time. And best of all, Bull and Branch gives you a fair price, plus a 30-day risk-free guarantee with free shipping and returns. Experience the best sheets you've ever felt with bowlandbranch.com. Get 15% off your first set of sheets when you use promo code Dr. Drew, D-R-D-R-E-W, at checkout. That's Bowl and Branch, B-O-L-L-A-N, branch, like the branch of a tree, bowlandbranch.com. Use promo code Drew. BetterHelp, they are fighting to end stigma. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. And look, the fact that we treat other parts of our body different than the brain is just positively bizarre to me. And now people are getting used to using electronic media to access mental health services, and BetterHelp has been leading the way. BetterHelp is customized online therapy, offers video, phone, even live chat sessions with your therapist. You don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Give it a try and see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy. I've sent patients, family. I've been very impressed with the services they render. And the Dr. Drew podcast listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/Drew. That is better, HELP.com/Drew. Matt, what's going on there?
Big Bad Drew.
Yeah, buddy, what's happening? We got to get that. Pull that song out, Gary. We need that song for A&D. People have been bringing that up for me. Okay, what's up?
Hey, I have a totally switching topics. I was just thinking about the whole Joe Rogan thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Whoopi's, like, Jewish American princess recipe thing from 35 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think the rule should be if you're not outraged at the time, whenever it's a comedy skit, comedy act, an article that you wrote, a song, or an interview. Like, if you're not outraged back then, you can't be outraged now.
Well, you can be. I think you can be, Matt, but you can at least give the person a chance to respond. You know, to go, you know what? At that point, I did not understand some of these things, or I didn't. It wasn't clear. You may not see it now. Like, for instance, occasionally Adam would have me read lyrics and, you know, say things that were embarrassing to me, and I would read them. I wouldn't say them out loud. It wouldn't come out of my brain. It would just be me reading lyrics, and then he'd laugh about it, right? And I'm sure there are some embarrassing, horrible things out there for that as well. And at the time, I thought to myself, I really thought to myself, I don't think I should even be saying these things. And I sought out advice. This is like 19, maybe 99, 98, 2000. I remember having a giant argument with Rude Jude on the radio, live on Sirius, where he was using the N-word like and arguing that white kids in Philadelphia were already doing this, therefore it was okay. And I said – I remember saying – no, I have talked to my friends. That word should not come out of your mouth. It's super clear. Keep it clear. Don't let it come out of your mouth. That's it, period. Now, well, I didn't know that when I was 17. I didn't know that when I was 35. But I went, and the fact that I didn't know it at those ages should also be a problem for us. We should all go, oh, my goodness, we have been stuck in a white point of view. Some people call it white supremacy. Some people call it Eurocentric. We need better language for that. But it's true. I needed to pay attention to because I had my – people call it privilege. It's more than that. It's just we have a Eurocentric, white-centric perspective that we don't – even when people ask us to pay attention, we don't quite get it. I've said for quite a while now, Matt. Go ahead.
No, that all makes sense, but I'm just saying, you know, if people weren't making a big deal about it back then, even though I agree, I think what he said was horrible about Planet of the Apes and that.
Yeah, oh, ridiculous. The fact that he – here's what's horrible, that he didn't know that that was terrible. That's what's horrible.
Right.
And he didn't quite address it in his apology, unfortunately. I liked his apology, except he didn't go – I had a perspective from being a white boy from wherever he's from that I need to be aware of that and I can do something I can do better. And I think that's what most people are talking about. Oh, what's this now? What are you sending up there for me, Matt? Hold on a second. I have bigotry. New name for what fueled Joe Rogan's new scandal, bigotry denial syndrome.
It's an NPR article that I saw last night.
Yeah, I saw him. I saw it. I didn't see the name. Bigotry denial syndrome. God, see, that's inflammatory. It's inflammatory to call it that. What's that? Go ahead.
You know, if it can we just like not use the word anymore? Like,
yes,
it shouldn't be okay for one group to say the word.
Well, that's a conversation. I think it's just easy for the rest of us just to go just radioactive, just don't use it, and that's what people are asking to do. That so what's wrong with that? Fine for now, whatever, that's radioactive, I don't use it. That's been 20 years for me. I've known that to be true, but I didn't know it before. I did not know it. Listen, here, you know what my background is? When I was an adolescent loved Richard Pryor and would repeat his routines from memory. You don't think the N-word was part of that then? And I did not realize what that meant, that me appropriating his humor, using his language was all no. Now, by the way, a lot of people did that at the time, and a bunch of comedians built careers off it too. So weird, right?
Yeah.
So it's all history. History's evolving. We're evolving. I actually agree with you. I agree with you that we shouldn't judge the past from the present moment. But we should talk about it. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, we can talk about it, but just as he shouldn't be, you know, cast.
No, there should be no. Listen, I am against cancellation.
And neither should Whoopi for doing the same thing, you know, 35 years ago.
Absolutely agreed. And not just 35 years ago. What she said about the Holocaust, we should all go, wow, how did she ever get that idea? Let's talk about it and see if we can, you know, rather than going up dead to me. No, what is that? And by the way. The dead to me thing, you know, the guillotines, that's just the present moment, which I've been saying for 2 years, which is eventually everyone goes on the guillotine. It will not miss anyone. So please don't think that because you're on the right side of things or the good guys that you will be missed. Look, just study French Revolution. Everyone goes on the guillotine. Matt, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very, very much. Gary, what do you think about that bigotry denial syndrome? How do you react to that?
I wasn't a huge fan of it. I think that it's a little bit.
I think it's a description of what this is, but to label it that is again just being inflammatory. Against why I don't like white supremacy. We need a language, and that's not it yet. It is a kind of denial, but it's not bigotry denial because bigotry is the outcome of the denial. You know what I mean? It's not denying your bigotry. It's denying your perspective that results in bigotry. And I don't know. I don't know. We got to think about it.
I don't know how to name it, but I agree there's probably a better name.
Dan, what's going on?
Hey, Dr. Drew, how are you?
I'm good, man. What's happening? How's good. The lovely state of – I love the state – I love the Dakotas. I've been up there a number of times, and they're just wonderful, wonderful states. Are you in Rapid City? Isn't that South Dakota?
Yeah. I live on the eastern side of the state in Sioux Falls. So it's the biggest city in South Dakota.
Nice.
And Rapid City is the second biggest. But the west side of the state is way more beautiful than the right side of the state, that's for sure.
Yeah, but it's a nice, interesting, diverse landscape. So what's up?
Oh, sorry, I may have lost you there.
There you go. What's going on?
So I had a question about miscarriages. So my wife and I have tried to get pregnant twice. The first time she had an ectopic pregnancy. We went into the doctor about a month after we found out. She did an ultrasound, and, you know, she said that things didn't look normal, and that's all we really got. And then we came back in a couple weeks later, and she said, this isn't going to be a viable pregnancy. So had the first miscarriage. Tried about a year and a half later, found out she was pregnant. About 6 or 7 days later, my wife started getting her period, a pretty severe period, and that was just a couple weeks ago. So another miscarriage. We've got a doctor's appointment in a couple weeks to, you know, try to figure out what the next steps are and what's wrong. But any advice? My wife's kind of freaking out.
Yeah, I know.
You know, now that she's had two miscarriages in a row.
I understand.
Any thoughts or advice?
Yes. Understand women are very deeply, profoundly affected by these experiences. So your first order of business, it's way beyond anything we as men really even understand. So that you need to take that position, like, I see what this does to you. I understand. I'm here to support you. And don't try to solve anything. Just be very supportive. So there's that. And let me understand, she had one ectopic. Is that right?
Yes.
One ectopic and then two first trimester miscarriages, right?
Just one first trimester miscarriages. This just happened where we haven't had an ultrasound. We just found out. We haven't even been to the doctor. This was just like last week. So, one ectopic and then one other miscarriage.
Didn't you say there was another one where there was a non-viable something going on?
No, sorry. I may have misspoke. One ectopic and then a year later we tried and that was this current miscarriage.
Okay. All right. So, you know, the first trimester, you know, miscarriages are very common, right? So that's, you know, that may or may not have anything to do with anything. The ectopic, they may need to sort of do something called a hysterosalpingogram, where they check her tube patency and function. Has she ever had a procedure like that?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, so that's probably in her future to make sure part of the problem isn't sort of getting the fetus to the uterus. The other thing is how old are you now? You're 33. How old is she?
I'm 33, and she is 28.
All right, so you have a little time on your hands, but I would hasten fertility evaluation. I wouldn't rush to it. Let's see what you're – are you seeing a fertility specialist or just kind of an obstetrician?
We were meeting with the OBGYN first, I think, or the pregnancy doctor first, but we haven't seen fertility specialist yet.
So my bet is the OBGYN will do a certain amount of workup. He or she will tell you to go try a few things. They'll sort of make some adjustments and give you a few months more of trial before they sent you to a fertility specialist. That's my bet. Now, if they tell you to see a fertility specialist, by all means do it, because there's something in their head. They may want you to get genetically tested, and I don't know, you know, how early they want to do that. And by the way, the gynecologist, this obstetrician may be able to do it him or herself. But you want to make sure there's not some inborn genetic error that's causing these early demises that you'd want to know about. You'd want to know about, particularly if you're going to bring a fetus to, you know, full term with an inborn error of some type. You want to kind of be prepared, testing for this. There are sort of several issues. One is tube function. Are her tubes working right? Tube function. Second is Is there some genetic, they may send you to what's called a genetic counselor. Is there some genetic issue you should be on top of aware of? And, you know, there are many other issues of fertility as well, right, in terms of the implantation process, in terms of her having autoantibodies to your sperm, all kinds of stuff. But what you do know is you can fertilize an egg. And so that is part of the question. You know, are you actually having fertility? You know, are you able to form a fetus? And the answer to that is yes, you can, because we know we had that ectopic pregnancy. So that answers a bunch of questions already. But I don't know. Well, I'd be interested to call back. I'm interested to see how they advise you. I haven't been in this situation in a while, and I'd be curious if they've, you know, send you off to fertility, or if they do a bunch of workup themselves first and then send you with some recommendations to enhance the fertility. I suspect okay. It's going to be the latter. I suspect it is. All right?
Yeah. All right. Yeah, certainly can. Yep.
All right. Good luck, man.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Drew.
Bye.
No one wants to spend an hour cooking dinner after a rough day at work. Well, with Freshly, no more. Food that's fast doesn't have to be fast food. That's right. Freshly offers quality meals without all the tough work and certainly with better nutrition. Get delicious, chef-made, nutrient-packed meals delivered straight to your door. No cooking required. Fresh and never frozen, ready to heat and enjoy in just 3 minutes. Use the Freshly website or app to find meals that fit your lifestyle and choose from over 50 nutritionist-designed entrees like their classic steak peppercorn, multi-serve sides, masterful mac and cheese. Skip the grocery shopping and the dirty dishes. Your meals arrive cooked and fresh every week. New meals are added weekly. Stop stressing about dinner right now, because Freshly is offering our listeners $40 off your first two orders when you go to freshly.com/Drew, F-R-E-S-H-L-Y, freshly.com/Drew. That is $40 off at freshly.com/Drew. Well, you've heard me talk about AMCN, and then insurance doesn't necessarily cover the cost of a emergency medical flight, or certainly not the full cost. You can still get hit with a substantial deductible and co-pays. Protect your family and your finances with an Air Medicare Network membership. As a member, if an emergency arises, the expense of air medical transport is completely covered when flown by an AMCN provider. Membership costs as little as $85 a year and covers your entire household every day, even when you're away from home. That is just pennies a day. We all know that the unexpected can happen, and AMCN membership is protection no family should do without. For a limited time, as the Dr. True podcast listeners, you'll get up to a $50 e-gift card when you join. Simply visit airmedcarenetwork.com/Drew and use offer code Drew. Well, the Jordan Harbinger Show. Look, we know Jordan. Adam and I have known him for years. He is a great guy. He's an interesting guy. He interviews only the most interesting people. And look, the guy himself speaks multiple languages. He has a law degree. He has been a captive in more than one situation. He'll tell you about that. You just search for the Jordan Harbinger Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, or go to jordanharbingershow.com/subscribe. That's right. You should really be listening. And I know that every day somebody tells you you have to listen to some podcast and you say sure, but the Jordan Harbinger Show is truly special. Each episode is a conversation with a different fascinating guest. Let's say someone who Jordan, for instance, talks to a hostage negotiator from the FBI, and on another, he talks to a cinematographer who discovered a lost city in the jungle. That's right. Jordan Harbinger Show, always focused on pulling useful, practical insights out of brilliant guests. I enjoy the Jordan Harbinger Show, and I think you will too. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show. That is H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. So I'm curious, you guys, I've got both Matt and Gary in the house today with me. Do you guys have any questions? You know, Gary, have you been talking about your little struggle lately?
Yeah, I've been open about the fact that I've been COVID positive for 8 days now.
And what were your symptoms?
The first day they were nothing. I was absolutely shocked to test positive. I was walking out the door when I glanced at the test and was very strongly positive. Then in subsequent days, I had some fatigue. I mean, I would go to the, you know, do stuff, move around the house and go out in the garage and get stuff. And I'd find myself getting tired faster than I should. But beyond that, kind of nothing.
Are you triple?
My wife.
Are you boosted?
Yeah, boosted. Boosted recently, as of right after Christmas. So within 4 weeks, 5 weeks or so, my wife, who did not test positive, had a really, really bad struggle. She had 4 or 5 days where I was, as you know, constantly in contact with you and trying to figure out monoclonal antibodies, mm-hmm. which unfortunately is way harder than it should be, and all kinds of stuff. She tested negative 8 days in a row.
Yeah. So the testing is all over the place, right? The testing. I was negative. My son, who brought it into the household, tested negative, and yet our whole household got it in varying degrees. Everyone else tested positive. I was in the presence of all the positive patients for weeks, did not get another illness, so I had it before the Omicron. The testing is all over the place with Omicron. You can test negative. You can test positive at the beginning and not later. You can test positive negative at the beginning and positive later. You can test positive weeks later. It's just all over the place. I don't know why it is that way, but it is all over the place. So testing is a hard thing to rely on. Yeah.
Her doctor, when she called to ask questions, basically said, if you get a positive test, trust it. If you get a negative test, that's bullshit.
Don't trust. Yeah, he or she is exactly correct. So, but what I'm interested in is the ability to get therapeutics now. So you and I was telling you on the phone how frustrated I was with trying to get sotrovimab, which is the one monoclonal antibody still effective against Omicron for sure. There are some Regeneron products that might be effective against Omicron. And Paxlovid, and now there's some new data on molnupiravir, show them to be excellent. And we couldn't get them. Yesterday, Gary, I found a website that the CDC put together where they will tell you what pharmacies are available, have been distributed both Paxlovid and molnupiravir, and how many doses they have on hand today. So in the future, everybody, it's a nationwide site. I'm going to pull it up here right now so I can get the name of it right for you. It's called COVID-19. Oh boy, it's COVID-19 Therapeutics Locator. It's a U.S. government procured COVID-19 therapeutics. It's from the FDA, an emergency use authorization. Again, it's a find locations therapeutic locator. Who's putting this out? DHHS, so Department of Health and Human Services. DHHS is putting it out. That's
right. So it's protect-public.hhs.gov.
I've got mine. The test I've got is COVID-19-therapeutics-locator-dhhs.hub.arcgis.com.
Again, all right. So if you go to the first site I gave you, there's a button. There's only one button, and it takes you to the one Drew just read off. So.
And by the way, it took me a half an hour of screwing around to get to this page. But you will find a map with dots all over it that are pharmacies and distribution centers for monoclonal antibodies. You can see what is up. I've been complaining about this for weeks and months. And I'm full of gratitude when our government or our HHS or our FDA or our CDC – does the right thing. I am filled with gratitude that the HHS has put this together. Thank you. Where the fuck was it 3 weeks ago when I had a patient that was dying? But okay, or 2 months ago, whatever it was. But thank you for putting it together. I am filled with gratitude, and hopefully the distribution will intensify. But know that these antivirals will be are extremely effective. If you have moderate illness, molnupiravir may be the best choice for you. If you have moderate to severe with risk of progression, definitely Paxlovid. Whether you need a monoclonal antibody also, it's an interesting question. Harder to get, but these things are out there. So, all right. I'm seeing a headline where Richard Pryor's daughter is in the headlines now, and people saying Rain Pryor says he'd be shocked by racism today. Have we gone backwards? Yeah. So I think it's that we've gone backwards. Drew, I think we've uncovered a bunch of stuff. Yeah. So I
agree. But just back to the previous topic, is our Paxlovid and Molnupiravir, however you say it, are those therapies that are going to be available to people who have not tested positive? Because that was kind of the issue I was running into with my wife.
I don't know the answer to that. You're probably going to have to go pharmacy by pharmacy. I'm sure people will lie about it. So what the hell? I don't know why that's – they typically want test positive. I would argue, I'm not saying it's time for civil disobedience. I'm saying that, as we've discussed already, the test is all over the place. So a negative test doesn't mean very much. If somebody has significant risk of progression in an opinion of a physician, they need therapeutics, period. And so these look like very safe medications so far. And let's say you're treating another virus that's progressing so fast that you worry someone's going into the hospital. How bad are you going to miss the mark with the molnupiravir or Paxlovid? So anyway, whatever.
I will give slight props to the doctor that helped my wife. She, on day three or four, said, maybe this isn't COVID. I'd like to have an antibiotic. And that doctor said, sure, no problem. Why not, as a stopgap? Let's just be safe. Drew, one thing I wanted to jump in with real fast, just because of how much we've been talking about scientific data today, I want to point out that this is recorded February 10th, 2022.
Okay.
It may come out in a week or two, but okay. I just want to cover it.
Be careful that things change, and I'm ready to change. I'm ready to change my impressions based on currently available wisdom. But if your wife had been 55 or greater, I would have approached her very differently than we did. Because the overwhelming probability is she's going to be fine. So it's overwhelming. So it gives us lots of room to kind of wait it out and just kind of, she's going to be fine kind of thing. Okay?
Yeah, it was very reassuring having you there. And it was enlightening to me when you finally called me and I said, I think it's breaking. And you just went, okay. And we're done. It was like, I'm not calling you again for the next few days, probably. And, we'll be in touch, because that
tells you everything you need to know. First of all, that the direction isn't going in the right direction. And it's the context. It's a young, healthy woman, young.
Yeah.
But and it's like,
I'm saying
it.
Your that's reaction of that, the, this, I was like, oh, okay, well then we're good. It just changed my whole outset too. Okay. So it was
It makes you nervous. It's a nasty illness. It's really nasty, and it can go bad in rare cases. And you don't want to be a rare case. So, but it's very, 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 very unlikely. All right, I got one more call. Oh, geez, I'm almost out of time. Right? Wow, my goodness. Ken, question. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey. Good morning.
Yeah. Hey.
Doctor. Hey, it's good to get a hold of you.
You as well.
Hey. Do you see the question up there? It's kind of off the cuff, kind of a fun topic. I thought I was going to talk with you and Adam, but have you ever heard the term SONES?
No. Is it like a hobo power?
Well, it's sound.
Oh, interesting.
And I've never heard of this, and the reason I got it is I'm buying a fart fan because I'm replacing an old fan that bit the dust. And it said on the box, four sones.
So interesting. Is that sound for an acronym or something?
No, it's actually meant for, it's a derivative of the word sound.
Weird.
And it's related to phone. I had to Google it, you see all that stuff.
Wow.
Anyway, that's what it was. I was wondering if he. I'm getting a four sones,
and that's loud enough to cover
your personal issues, but it's not hoity-toity enough to be the high dollar fan.
I have another
prescription question.
Okay, hold on. It's for 10 hobo power. So go ahead. What's the actual?
Here's the actual medical question. Yeah. I got a meeting checkup on Monday. Mm. So this is. Perfect timing.
Yeah.
I used to take phenofibrate for high triglycerides. My high triglycerides are like over 1,000.
Yeah.
So they had me on phenofibrate, 54 milligrams, for a couple years. Mm. And what I finally got off it because my muscles ached.
Oh, yeah, it's not good.
And I didn't put two and two together until finally I realized I'm taking this medication for years, and I've been feeling like an old man for years. I'm 55.
Yeah.
And so the doctor just took me off. He goes, okay, yeah, you're not right for that. And he just checked it off, next medication.
Yeah.
So they tried me on Gemfibrozil.
Yeah.
Is that comparative or not? I'm still sore, but not crazy sore. So I'm going in to talk to my doctor. I still have aches. My legs ache. And, I get up and I move around and I think I'm 55-year-old aches and pains. Does Jim is a different family of drug? Is it the same family doing the same thing for this triglyceride? That's my question.
Let me double check. I believe it's a completely different thing. I mean, it's so hard. They don't give you the right information on these sites. I haven't used, I'll tell you, no, it's no problem. Gosh darn it.
I guess my question is I still feel aches, but not in the severe that I had before.
Yeah.
So I know I was good to change.
Stupid. And you were on fenofibrate.
I was on fenofibrate.
Yeah.
And I think it was originally 54. I think it was over 100 at the time I was done taking it. And it brought my triglycerides down. So it did what it was supposed to do.
So they're very similar in terms of efficacy. Fenofibrate was way better. It went head-to-head.
I got my blood test, and she's going to show me the results. So I don't know how good the gemfibrozole works.
Oh, coenzyme A reductase inhibitor. Statin. Oh, my goodness. I have not used it's funny. Here's my take. The fenofibrate and gemfibrozole are things we used to use a lot in isolation for high triglycerides. And what happened is some of the statins started covering the triglycerides as well.
Okay.
And so atorvastatin, for instance, particularly is one that we just started using, and it seemed to take care of that problem. So we didn't need so much to isolate it. Also, high triglyceride, low HDL is associated – now this is controversial, but with hyperinsulinemia and insulin resistance. And there is a group of people out there – I'm not recommending this, but I'm just going to educate you about this – who suggest that cutting out carbohydrates may have a significant effect on this metabolism as well. And the other thing is to make sure – you know, hypertriglyceridemia can have a – underlying cause, pancreatic disease, all kinds of stuff. And so you should be asking, you know, is there something workup we should be doing to see why my triglycerides are so elevated? And muscle pain from statin or these other, you know, gemfibrozole, that's not a good thing. You really should be thinking about adjusting course if you can to find something that works.
Well, so, the fenofibrate, it was a night and day. I got off it within 5 days. I was a new man.
Yeah,
so I was like – holy cow.
I get it.
The only reason is I did some research. The doctor never really followed up.
Well, we don't think about that when it's causing the muscle aches as so much as the statins, which very commonly do that. You're kind of in a weird situation. And there's another medicine called Vytorin, which attacks both the production of cholesterol and the absorption of cholesterol. And in my experience, and this is just anecdotal, with a low-carbohydrate diet, that combo really has a rather powerful effect. Again, your particular physiology has to be kind of nailed down and addressed. It's not like we have one size fits all, particularly with hypertriglyceridemia as the primary issue. So
that was my the other thing is I had a heart valve changed out. I called you guys a few years ago. So that's what started all this. Once they start looking at you, you become a lab rat.
Well, not a lab rat. They're doing what they're supposed to do. They treated you appropriately.
I'm not complaining.
Yeah, it's just that.
But my surgeon told me, he said, "Your high triglycerides. I've seen it in guys like you that have valve issues."
Oh, isn't that interesting?
And he just made an off the cuff. He didn't put too much taking it, but he was changing my heart valve out. So you may want to go back
to them or email them or something, because the question is, did he mean that the valve problem was causing the triglyceride issue, or people with high triglycerides get valve problems? I suspect it's the latter. I didn't go into it with him.
He kind of just said guys like you, and I was in my early 50s when I had the valve replaced. I had a tricuspid. I was born with a bicuspid that should have been a tricuspid. It was the aortic valve, and they changed out the root, and then they put in a pace. You know, they did the whole thing.
Yep.
I'm a $50 million man.
Good for you, man. So, again, I'm being very vague because this is kind of an unclear situation until there's a lot more information out. But thank you for the call, Ken. I got to wrap this thing up. I'm way over time. And thank you all for being here. We appreciate you calling in. Gary, Matt, thank you for participating here today. And I will talk to you all next time.
For calling times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.
This February on Pluto TV, we're putting the spotlight on iconic black talent. Watch your favorite movies like Top 5, 48 Hours, and More Than a Game. And drop in to binge black TV classics like The Bernie Mac Show and Moesha. Pluto TV has hundreds of channels and thousands more movies and TV shows all for free. So download the Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start watching today. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free.
Chapter 1, Wayfair welcomes you to the neighborhood. Our hero, Titus Burgess, ambled down the stylish street of an enchanting utopia. A woman waved from a chic lounger. "Welcome to the neighborhood," she said, "where Wayfair helps everyone create a home they love." Titus stared in awe. Bohemian Boulevard, Trendsetter Terrace, Mid-Century Circle.
Titus, You're reading the Wayfair catalog.
Oh, you'll love Chapter 2. Wayfair's fast and free shipping saves the potluck.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.